Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. Happy New Year, everyone. Hope you had a great and healthy holiday season and New Year's. And we are getting close to the return of truly high-level mixed martial arts in the new year. This break has been welcomed and enjoyed by many in the industry, myself included. Hope you liked the podcast I delivered while we had no fights, but we are ready soon to get back to business here. Of course, UFC Fight Night 249 kicking off the UFC schedule on Saturday, headlined by Mackenzie Dern versus Amanda Ribas 2. That is just a little bit of an appetizer for what is to come on January 18th. UFC 311 is an absolute banger at the Intuit Dome. Two incredible title fights, Islam Makhachev versus Armin Sarukian, the rematch. Mirab Dvalishvili versus Umar Nurmagomedov, the grudge match. I can't wait next week to get out to Los Angeles to cover that one. Will be my first event of the year, of course, and is going to be a freaking great night. I can't wait. But before that, we have a little bit of 2025 preview content coming to you today. UFC correspondent, NFL sideliner, reporter extraordinaire, Miss Megan O'Leary, going to join the show for the first time, and we are going to hand out our 2025 wish list. What do we want to see from the sport in this coming year? Could be something in the cage, could be something outside of the cage, could be a personal desire, whatever it may be. Me and Megan will give our top wishes for 2025 and discuss each of them a little bit, some of them at short, some of them at length, but going to be a great time. And I hope you all can show your support to the show, whether it is a comment, a follow, whatever it may be. Drop your 2025 wishes for what you want to see from the sport in the comments. So thankful for Megan's time on this. I thought it was a great discussion, and we are getting ready for big things here in 2025. So we will take a quick break and be right back on the other side with Megan O'Leary. And we are back on the Bonfire with a first-time guest of the show, Megan O'Leary, UFC reporter, NFL sideline reporter extraordinaire. Megan, you're just killing it right now. How are you? Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year. I'm great. Thank you. Yes, football season just ended, so now it's just smooth sailing with only UFC for the next few months.
Yeah, and I want to ask you a couple of NFL things in a second here, but first I want to say, I think you were semi-inspiration for this podcast, Megan. I want to give you some credit because I've been thinking of doing this for like years and years, right? But when we did that half-year award show, there was like so much nice feedback and people like, you need to do a podcast, do one with Megan, or like make her a regular, all these things. So it was like such nice feedback. And I think that really gave me the confidence to like push forward. It took me an extra 4 or 5 months on top of that. But yeah, I really appreciate, I guess, like that moment we had doing that show and the confidence it gave me leading into this.
That was so fun, and you are a natural at this, and your passion for the sport and for all things that touch the sport in any way is obvious. And so I'm glad that you've provided a platform for yourself and for fans to be able to hear you and your great insight.
Oh, I appreciate that. So yeah, obviously wanted to have you back as we kind of have the actual show here now that's in my name. But yeah, you mentioned, you know, the NFL season's over. I know that's tiring for you, especially when you're working UFC as well. I guess like, how is that balance for you dealing with that throughout the season and all your UFC responsibilities?
You know, it's just about time management. For me, I've been really lucky, both the UFC and all the executives, all of my bosses, producers, and the NFL and Fox and all the executives, producers, bosses over there. They understand that I have two different obligations. And so no one gets mad, like, if I have to miss a Zoom for something. And it's just about, you know, trying to manage my time. So I always make sure that Mondays I hang out with Joe, and that's like our Sunday. And then, you know, it's just about diving into research, watching games when you can. I work on planes all the time. That's where I get most of my work done. And I feel like, what else am I going to do? And yeah, and then there's been a lot of sleepless nights between a UFC event and a game the next morning. But I just look at it as, how blessed am I to have these two incredible jobs that I know a lot of people in the world would, you know, want to have. And in the sports landscape, sometimes to even have one job can be difficult. So I just try to always take it as a positive, no matter how tired I am, no matter how stressed I am, and just keep it moving. But it's cool because the fighters have been so nice about it. And then on Sundays, so many players will come up to me and talk to me about fights or their favorite fighters. And so it's a really nice crossover, and everybody's just made it pretty seamless for me this season. So it was great.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I'm not like a huge NFL fan. I'd consider myself like casual at best. But from what I saw, I guess just like reading about you going into this season, it seems like your status was like elevated a little bit. You kind of moved up in the tiers of the teams. Is that accurate? And I guess, how do you find that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge compliment. I work with incredibly talented people, and you know, there's very few teams that actually call NFL. You know, if you think about it, between all of the networks, there's really less than a dozen groups of people that get to do this for a living. And so to be on one of them and to be one that is considered for higher viewership games or whatever that might be, you know, I don't care if it's the highest rated game or the worst rated game of the week, to do an NFL game is still massive. It is America's sport at the end of the day. And so it was a huge compliment, and I don't take it for granted. And I feel like it made me push even harder to know more and work more and be the most informed. And yeah, it was really fun. And you know, I mean, the NFL on Fox, the song is iconic. The morning show's iconic. Tom Brady did his first year. So yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. And I guess going into next year, is it like, you know, like a similar role? Do you expect more kind of change in the upward trajectory, or what are you hearing, I guess, coming out of this season's work?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many talented women who are on the sidelines. You have women like Pam Oliver and Christina Pink and Aaron Andrews that are all, you know, on these different tiers. And so I think I'll probably stay where I am. Hopefully there's no demotion, but, you know, I'm whatever challenges Fox puts in front of me or the UFC puts in front of me, I'm ready to step up for them. But, you know, I'm more than happy to have it continue as it did this year.
Mm-hmm. And last thing on this, I guess, how do you find interacting and interviewing the athletes in that sport compared to MMA? Because as I said, like, the only reason I'm probably a semi-casual NFL fan is just like the time I can't dedicate to following another sport. It's MMA,
yeah,
so consuming. And then the only other thing I really have time for is like NBA stuff that I do on the side. But
exactly,
covered NBA, it feels like just being in this sport for so long, how open the athletes are, how willing they are to, I guess, be asked like any question. Sometime I'll go into like an NFL or an NBA rather locker room and hear the other reporters, and like I'll ask a question and they always like give you a little bit of a side eye being like, how did you ask him like that much of an open question? But you're just so confident doing it after working with the MMA athletes. Do you find something similar, or is there different challenges with NFL guys?
A little bit. I think the biggest challenge is actually when it comes to time, because what people don't realize is as soon as the game ends, I mean, and you might see it on like the big games of the week, but as soon as the game ends, it's maybe 2 minutes until you are wrangling, you know, with the PR staff, a player for an interview. And for me, we only get two questions max. They want it to be a minute or less. And so after a game, sometimes there are so many things that, you know, a quarterback might want to talk about, or, you know, a star receiver might want to talk about, but you have to try and narrow it down to two that you know they'll answer, or feel passionately about answering. And I think that's the trickiest thing. Otherwise, like, I try to take the same stance in terms of like pregame that I do pre-fight. And it's, I just try to be respectful of their space, where they are mentally. If I see somebody is doing a crazy warm-up, I absolutely don't interrupt. I will just creepily wait by the tunnel. And, you know, when they're walking, that's when I'll talk to them. So I always try to have like the same level of respect. And I think that comes across. And so then that ends up where I can get more and more information, because they know I'm not prying, I'm not interrupting their flow or their workout for the day. And then in our group meetings, I think the other thing is like not breaking anyone's trust. If they say, don't say this on air, we don't say it on air. Mm-hmm. Because who cares about like a 30-second report for one game when it's somebody else's trust that you're going to earn. And so I think it's those things, but otherwise the athletes are all kind of the same. You know, we have some fighters who are like locked in when it comes to fight time, and you have some fighters that like will sit in a room with you and chat for 30 minutes. So it's kind of all the same. You just have to like read the room real quick and then get to it.
You talk about like the disclosure element and like, you know, learning things that could be or not be on the broadcast. How does that differ from like MMA when you're sitting in a fighter meeting and, you know, they're giving you that type of information that you have to distinguish what's usable and what's not?
I think I always just proceed with caution. And that's a situation where I feel very comfortable asking producers, hey, do you think this is appropriate to talk about on air? And then oftentimes I'll go back to the athlete and be like, hey, you told me this yesterday. I just want to make sure you're okay with me saying it. I do that a lot, actually, because, you know, sometimes people are passionate in the moment and they're just talking about something and they want to share it. And most of the time they mean to share it. But every once in a while, they're like, you know what? I thought about it. I'm so glad you asked me. Can you not say that? And of course, there are a million other things to talk about when it comes to sports. We don't have to ever talk about the one thing the specific athlete doesn't want to mention. So yeah, it's, I always say like proceed with caution in those scenarios, and you can never go wrong, really.
Yeah, definitely. That's fair. Okay, Megan. Well, the reason I brought you in today is obviously we just turned the calendar to a new year. I know a lot of people have done like kind of their looks past at 2024. A lot of talk. I'm kind of over looking at the past. Yeah. So I want to talk about the future here. And 2025, obviously a big year, obviously for the sport as always. But I want to give our wish list for what we want from the UFC and MMA in 2025. So I kind of gave you that little bit of homework assignment. I came up with a few on my own. You came up with yours. So I guess, first of all, I will give you the floor. This is in no particular order for the viewers either here. So we're not going like for most important. We'll just kind of chat about these for a few, but what do you want to lead off with?
Okay. So no particular order. And then you said it could be, you know, personal, could be company related, whatever it might be. So I'm going to start with an easy one, but one I think we can all get on board with. And I would like for 2025 to see UFC Spain. Mm. Ilia Topuria, let's go headline a card in Spain. The fans would obviously love it. It's a new destination for us. We all travel so much for these events, but I think Spain is a country that all of us could get behind going to. So UFC Spain. I had a side note that like UFC Hawaii and return to UFC Japan are also there. So I'm going to categorize them under one, but UFC Spain, that's my number one.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. I actually had that on my list as well. We all want to go to Spain. I mean, that would be an amazing experience, especially if they could get it done like in a soccer stadium, the Bernabeu or whatever. Like that would just be an unreal environment. I know the UFC is reluctant to do stadiums. I understand Dana White's reasoning, having been in all sorts of venues for these fights, but that just seems like an opportunity, if you can execute it, that you couldn't pass over.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, and I mean, Ilia Topuria, I guess, just talking about him a little bit, he was one of the best fighters of 2024. A lot of people gave him Fighter of the Year. I mean, what's kind of your sense? I had Daniel Cormier on the pod a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about kind of the most influential figures of the year, and he didn't have him in his top five. I think I had him at number three, and he basically just said he didn't feel like those events he headlined with Volkanovski and Max were like, you know, the big pay-per-view sellers of the year, like top three, anything like that. But he felt the stage was set for like a breakthrough year for Topuria in 2025. Do you kind of see it the same way? I know like he got a lot of credit for what he did this in 24, but it seems like now is his chance to really become that like global superstar.
I think I definitely can agree with Daniel on that, but I kind of view it from a different lens as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're MMA reporters. This is what we do. So we're going to look at what do the pay-per-view numbers do? What do the viewership numbers do? Social media hits, that kind of stuff. However, I think he is an athlete that, and we've had quite a few of them, but they do it so well when they're these special stars that can kind of transcend the sport as well. I mean, he was in a Dolce & Gabbana ad. I believe it was Dolce & Gabbana fragrance. He's been in GQ. There's a fascination with him from people from both Georgia and Spain as well. And he appeals to non-fight fans who just might want to support their countrymen or might see him and the way he dresses and the way his fiance dresses and be like, this is the coolest couple. I want to follow them. So I think he's already a big influencer and a big star. I do, however, believe that 2025 can really accelerate all of those things in both like how he sells pay-per-views, what his star does within the sport itself. And then, of course, with that comes those extra things as well. And any sort of, you know, hookup he has with Dolce & Gabbana and he wants to tell me about would be great.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think would be the bigger fight for the Spanish market? Is it the Volkanovski rematch or is it this Diego Lopez fight? Because, you know, he speaks Spanish and there's that whole element of how you could maybe have them both in that market promoting with the language and all those things.
I think the language is a massive aspect of it. So I think it's Diego Lopez. And I mean that no disrespect to Alex. And I don't mean that I think one should get the fight over the other either. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're going to place a fight in Spain, or even if you're going to have a fight with him where you go on a tour, they used to do some pretty big media tours back in the day. Yes. To have two guys that can speak the same language and appeal to the same audiences where you're trying to break into new markets, where you're trying to tap, we think we can get these fans out of it, but you know, if only they spoke the language, I think that would be huge. And there's no denying that if that happened in Spain, would I think do phenomenal numbers in the lead up as well.
Yeah, I guess it depends when this event happens, right? Like, I think there is a world where both of them happen, right? Like, I could see him fighting Volk maybe earlier in the year, and then maybe Spain happening in the second half of the year, and yeah. If maybe Diego gets another win, that's the fight. So there's a few different options here. I think we just have to see how featherweight shakes out in the next few months here.
I agree, very much so.
Yeah. Okay. So my first wish for 2025 is Dustin Poirier. I just want to see him get the win in his retirement fight. And this is no slight. I'm doing this now because you can't say you're picking against someone or you want someone to lose. He doesn't have his fight announced. I don't know who the opponent is going to be, but he's teasing it. And I think anyone who's followed the sport or his career would love to see him have like that kind of perfect retirement moment. I don't know if it'll be in Louisiana or not, or what the situation would be, but you know, it'll be a great matchup with a great opponent. And it would be a real feel good story if he could leave the sport on his own terms.
I agree. And that so rarely happens in our sport. We saw it happen for a guy like Robbie Lawler, who is much deserved for, but it doesn't happen often. And so for him to be able to do that, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I wasn't sure if his last fight was going to be his final one. And so, you know, my message to him was like, you and Jolie talk about it and whatever you guys decide is right. Like, that's the right answer for you. And so I mean, whoever they book him against, it's going to be amazing. And yeah, I just hope it's everything that he wants for himself. I love that. I actually, you know, I have way more than five on my list, and that's one of them. Mine was Dustin Poirier fighting in Louisiana. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that happens. I know they had some talks with the commission about maybe like a first quarter event there. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think it could be in play for sometime this year. But I guess it depends how long Dustin wants to wait and the timing, because that's what always makes it tricky. He's, you know, already been out for half a year. So I don't know how long you want to stay on that, but I'm not surprised that he's decided to do one more. We talked about this when we did like our half year awards, and you said kind of your gut feeling was he would do it again. And that's ultimately what he decided.
Yeah. Well, we're in for a treat no matter who it is and where it is.
Yeah. Do you have if you could pick, if they said, Megan, we want you to be the matchmaker for today for Dustin Poirier's final fight, who are you picking?
Okay. Well, I saw, maybe Max Holloway, and I don't like that because I love them both. So yeah. I would actually hate that fight as much as I would love it. Gosh, that's a really good question. I didn't hate the idea. I saw this 4-man tournament of some of the veterans at 155 for the BMF title. And I definitely would be down for something like that, which is actually leading me into my next suggestion. But yeah, I don't know. It's difficult because I think the problem is that weight class is full of so many guys we've worked with for so long that it's hard to not like feel pain in your heart when one of them doesn't get their hand raised. And so when they go against each other, you're just like, oh my God, what is happening? You know, you just hope for a great fight.
Yeah, that was me when the last time and Dustin and Max fought at UFC 236, I was literally cage side. Like, these are my two favorite people in the sport. Yeah. We love fighting each other. So yeah, I do not want to see that one again. I think the layup one is just do the Justin Gaethje trilogy. I mean, it's right there for you. They're one and one, all that. It would be great if it could be in Louisiana because Dustin did the first fight in Arizona where Justin Gaethje's from. So like it would make a lot of sense, but we'll see what direction they go. But you said your next one kind of ducktailed off this. So let's move into that.
Yes, might be a little controversial because we don't do this, but I would love to see a one-night 4-man tourney for something. I thought about the BMF title because that's been thrown out there. I love the idea. I saw somebody talk about the flyweights because there's so many people kind of neck and neck right now in the division to have another shot or their first shot at Pantoja. I thought that could be really fun. And I just think it would be interesting. We don't do it, so that's kind of like a pipe dream, but I think it would be just so interesting to cover as well, you know, having these couple of fights in a single night. And so that's on my list.
Yeah, I mean, it could be done. It would obviously, I think, have to be maybe like overseas in a place
where the UFC maybe specific has commission.
Or like self-regulates. I mean, within the unified rules and like in North America, it could be done, but the way it has to be structured is it can only be a maximum of 5 rounds in one night, right? So like, you've seen this happen. I think Bellator did a couple of them where like the first fight is 2 rounds and then the second fight is 3 rounds, and then you're kind of messing with judging and like all these things. But yeah. And I struggle to think if they did it with those guys for the BMF thing, like who's making it to that second fight?
I know, right? Like, that's the thing. Exactly. It needs to be one round, I think.
Yeah. I know. Some of them might not need that much, but yeah, that would be spectacular. I'd love to see something like that come into play, but it feels like UFC is a little past those days.
Yeah, I agree. But I said it was a pipe dream, but still.
Yeah. Well, here, I'll throw my pipe dream one out here. It goes completely different direction here, but I would love to see the UFC bring back the old school media days that we used to have, the ultimate media days in the big room. Yes. And I don't know if it's ever going to happen. I understand why they like doing it in the big room now. It's much more controllable environment. They know everything that's being said. They can send out the thing, but from us on the media side, like you're not getting a diversity in content and things like that. And, you know, I can throw it back to you. Like when I first really started watching the sport and getting into the media side, like I would sit there every media day, every post fight, wait for your interviews with Heavy, look for Karen Bryant's interviews for MMA Heat, Ariel Helwani's interviews, and Showdown Joe Ferraro's interviews. Those were the ones Showdown I would always Joe. Just be refreshing and being like, where's the next one coming up? And it would be with the same people, but you guys would all have something a little bit different. And I think from like reporter side, that gains you a lot of confidence and experience and being firsthand with the fighter sitting there looking at them. Like, I think maybe it gives you a different level of respect or appreciation for the interview process. And this next generation of reporters aren't getting to experience that. Like maybe other promotions or certain media events, you kind of have that access, but modern day, like if you're getting into it since COVID, you don't really have those opportunities for growth.
I could not agree more. And I feel like the reps that you got, and I mean, sometimes we would do 12 interviews in 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And you're just, and it's whoever's open next. It wasn't like there was a specific order. So you better know what you want to ask every single one of those athletes. Mm-hmm. And it was about making it unique. And I also felt like it was a really good way for all of us in the media at that time to like get to know one another, help each other out. Like we would, I mean, Karen Bryan is one of the earliest examples for me. She's somebody who, you know, if she was in a scrum, she would save a spot for me. Or if she was finishing up, she'd be like, hey, I'm finishing, come over here, you know? And I felt like we all kind of got to interact a little bit more, or at least in a different way than we interact now, and help one another. And the reps, the way you got to know athletes, and the way athletes got to kind of express themselves differently through, you know, all these different outlets and interviews. It was so fun. I never actually would have even thought of putting that on a list, but I love that suggestion so much.
Yeah, it'd be great to see. Just like, I remember one time, like for Derek Lewis out of media day, it was his birthday, and I like got some balloons and some banners and like put it up on his set and tried to get him to wear a little birthday hat during the interview. And he's like, no, I'll just hold it. But like, you just don't get that content there. And I understand like the side of it, you know, if they had 15 people in a room, there would be a few fighters sitting in the corner, just looking at their phone. Yeah. No one's there. So like the way they do it now, you're guaranteed everyone is going to get at least a few minutes. Yeah. So like, I get it, but yeah, just for, I mean, this is more of a selfish one from the media side. I completely understand UFC's perspective on why they do it now.
We're just reminiscing on the days of old, because now we're old and we used to be young then, and we're not, so it's fine.
I mean, that was, do you feel like that, those times, the Heavy MMA days, that was obviously a huge part of your process and getting to where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, basically it was just like, hey, figure this out, kid. And you know, thankfully I worked with Dave Farah as my co-host on that show. And you know what people don't realize is that was literally the official pre and post show for pay-per-views. UFC sponsored it before they had a TV deal. So it was pretty incredible. And then all the interviews we did with Heavy, and just, I mean, it was nonstop and constant, but it also gave me not just a level of like professionalism with reps and stuff like that, but it gave me a level of comfort as well that I think helped kind of snowball into the next things that I was able to do. So I'm incredibly grateful for guys like Matt Brown that I worked with over there. And it was really fun. And for the time we were kind of groundbreaking. We were like some of the first ever live stream, in the sports field. And so, yeah, it was fun, but yeah, sometimes I'm like, how did I do that?
Yeah. Some people are going to be listening to this and like not knowing some of these names we're referencing in outlets and stuff, which I guess shows how far the sport has come. But yeah, you were, you know, once on our side of the fence is the,
exactly. Still there.
Yes. Okay. Megan, what's your next one?
Okay. So I'm going fight related for this one. And we have a lot of obvious ones that we could all talk about, things we want to happen in 2025. But I have some challengers I want to see against the champs. Mm-hmm. So I want to see Kayla Harrison, Tatiana Suarez, and Khamzat Chimaev all get opportunities to fight for the title, whoever the champion might be, whenever they get that chance in 2025. Mm-hmm. I think
Tatiana's got hers, right?
Well, yeah. But I want to make sure we get there.
Yes. I've said that too. I'm like, we're not till fight week. Yeah. Fingers crossed, we're gone.
I think with all three of them, we have probably talked about for years what they would look like against whoever the champion was at that time. You know, whether it was who the champion is now, or whether it was, you know, how would they match up against this new champ? I felt like we were often saying their names, even, you know, when Kayla wasn't in the organization, people were talking about her against Amanda Nunes. And poor Tatiana has suffered through so many injuries in her career where you always thought like a title shot would be next. And there'd be a setback or a layoff or whatever it might be. And Khamzat, we've been talking about getting a title shot forever. So I think this is the year where we see those challengers be able to step up against the champions that we have, you know, kind of fantasized about for a long time, seeing what it would look like stylistically. And hopefully we get those matchups soon.
Yeah, I think those are all great ones. I had Khamzat Chimaev fights for a UFC title, so that was like, I guess, the closest to that, and which we've all been begging for. I'm a little surprised it's not happening in February. I know there was some hesitation about bringing Sean Strickland back to Sydney for another fight after, you know, the incident with the fan and stuff last time.
But they love him there. Like, yes, there was one scenario, but like, he was the favorite in that fight. They really had his back in the lead up and all the press conferences and the weigh-ins and stuff. So, I mean, I get it on one hand, but on the other hand, it's like, they love him there. So I think it's great.
Yeah, but hopefully we'd like to see Khamzat fight the winner of that. I think that's what makes sense. But there's just all this mystery of where can he fight, when can he fight, the health, all that stuff. But hopefully it's smooth sailing from here on out. I know he has booked like a Australia-wide media tour for the same week of UFC 312, so hopefully he'll be cage side and present and all that stuff. But it is interesting that they didn't go his direction, especially Dana White was like kind of, you know, pointing in that direction that we'd go. I don't know why ultimately that didn't come to be. I'm sure we can ask him, but yeah, that would be a great one. Kayla, I guess we'll see what happens there. I was talking to Ali Abdelaziz a couple days ago, and he said they're working on it, but it sounds like Juliana Pena's status is like up in the air. And he kind of alluded to an interim title might come into play for this. And he said, obviously Raquel Pennington would probably be the leading candidate, but you see Norma Dumont out there like beating the drum for it. So I don't know how this is going to go. We haven't heard from Juliana, but it does seem like Kayla's next fight will be for the title, interim or otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that is interesting. I wonder what's going on with Juliana, but.
And let's just, we need Tatiana and Weili to fight. Okay. Yes. We need this.
Yes. And hopefully, you know, on the back end of that, just more activity in the strawweight division. I'd also like to see for that title. I don't know, you know, why Zhang Weili only fights like once a year, but I'm sure there's a reason to it. But this was the right fight to make for sure. I know Verna Jandiroba isn't happy about losing her fight at UFC 310, but this is the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess since we're talking about fights that we want to happen, this one's obvious. We want to see John Jones and Tom Aspinall unify UFC heavyweight.
I knew that was going to be on your list, so I didn't put on mine.
Yeah. I mean, it was like the almost too easy one, but you got to throw it out there. We're, 30 minutes in here. So I think that's the fight to make easily, but it's just a question of it's going to happen. I know Joe Rogan that has like a little clip going viral like today and yesterday saying he heard that they're going to pay John Jones his FU money, which may be $30 million. I think he deserves every penny of that. So I hope it comes to be.
And I think that Tom's been really patient in a scenario that you don't typically envision yourself in when you become an interim champion. And I think the whole world now has even more anticipation for the matchup because of it. So, you know, while I'm sure it's been frustrating and probably on both ends, because John was being asked about it nonstop when he was fighting somebody totally different. And Tom is just like, hey, what about me? I've defended the interim belt. But now I think people have been kind of exposed to what the scenario looks like now for so long that everyone's even more excited for what that matchup could potentially be.
Yeah, and I think the biggest hint that maybe we are getting close to the finish line on that is Tom Aspinall has been very quiet for the past few weeks, right? Like he was beating the drum. Like you kind of know something's going on when people aren't out there. Like if this had no ground to it, he'd probably still be out there saying John Jones is ducking me, making videos, all that stuff. You haven't seen much of that from him.
That's true. As well as the holidays, so we might give him a pass for that.
Yeah, he's got that's kids. Also true. Yeah, but no, they need to sort that out. Like you see these graphics the UFC posts of like champions at the beginning of 2024 and champions at the end, and you have Tom Aspinall sitting there.
Yeah,
with the
I know.
Like this can't go on much longer.
No, and hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully 2025 is where we see the end of that road.
Yeah. Do you think win or lose, is that going to be John Jones' last fight? Like, do you think this is the last year of John Jones in the UFC?
It's a good question. I think whatever he wants to do is, I think, you know, obviously the road he's going to go down. But I don't know how many more of the challenges excite him. He's done it all in the sport. I mean, he's arguably the GOAT. And so when you are so talented and some of these wins come so easy and you've got money and, you know, fight life is hard, whether you're cutting weight or not, you know, heavyweight or not, fight life is hard, and preparing to fight another person and media or fight week is such a grind with the media. And I know he had so much on his plate for this last one. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a giant paycheck and gets to do this unification bout, that if it is his last one. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he's like, you know what, I kind of like this new fresh up and comer, or I like Alex Pereira and I want to see what that looks like. So, you know, I think that there are a lot of different things in play. I think timeline is going to be important as well.
Yeah, and Dana White did say, I guess, before UFC 309 there, that you know, if John does fight Aspinall, then he'll give him the Alex Pereira fight after. So maybe that's how things come together. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If he does the Tom Aspinall fight and he wins, literally he can do whatever he wants. But yeah, I think I still wonder if his whole play in New York was like just messing with us and like a stroke of genius saying, you know, just brushing Tom off at every opportunity, knowing that it would further build the fight. I don't know. You saw the reaction on his face at the press conference when the New York fans were chanting Tom Aspinall's name. Yeah. And he was like, oh, okay. So I do think he is warming up to it. And I do think he was playing us a little bit in New York, because John, you know, for all his credit, he knows how to work the media. He's very, very smart about the fight game.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. You are not wrong.
Yeah. Okay. What's your next one, Megan?
Okay. So I struggled because I have a bunch on my list, but this is my top five. So okay. I don't think it would start in the UFC right away. I think it would need to start with something like Road to the Octagon or Contender Series. But I love the idea of bringing Adam Waite in, women's Adam Waite. I think it would provide a lot of women that we see compete in Invicta and a lot of other female athletes from different walks of life to come in or have something to continue to train for. And so, like I said, I don't think that we're going to make a roster spot for it yet, a full weight class in the UFC. But I would love to see, like, if we can start building some of these fights up or start garnering, maybe it's on the Ultimate Fighter, we get, you know, an Adam Waite season. But I love the idea of expanding the women's divisions and expanding them into a division that we know is very athletic, is very exciting, is very entertaining when we see Adam Waite in other organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's interesting because, you know, Dana White did allude to this year that they have been discussing that. It's the first time in years he's talked about a new weight class. So it does seem there maybe is some momentum towards that. You just wonder, like, you know, there's so many damn fighters on the roster now to add another division. You wonder how they're going to add that flexibility and things like that. But I know they would love to have another champion to promote for events and headline cards and things like that. So having more belts never hurts. You just wonder about the depth of that division. But I certainly think there's more upside to Adam Waite than, you know, bringing back women's featherweight or something like that.
I think, unfortunately, that is probably accurate at this point in time for the talent that's available and the appeal and the style of fights that we see in the weight class. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the road to UFC thing, definitely interesting, though, because that's where they could, of course, groom that type of talent and things like that, give them the opportunity. Yeah, I think that's a fun one. I love that as well. Yeah. I don't have any weight class related ones on mine to ducktail off that. But the next one was this summer, I would like to see the newly retired Demetrius Johnson as part of the UFC Hall of Fame class.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I think he's obviously needs to be there someday. My only reluctance is I've been kind of one to campaign for, like, I think we need a like retirement period before we start inducting the retired fighters, because, like, look at Jose Aldo, like, that one kind of hurt my heart a little bit.
Same.
Like, yeah, let's just do this a few years later when we know for sure, like, other sports have this. There's a window of eligibility. I get it. Like, UFC wants to capitalize on the big names and things like that. They have tickets to move, all this different stuff. But yeah, a few of these are like, it still bums me out. Anderson Silva hasn't been present at any of his Hall of Fame stuff and just little things like that. But I say Demetrius because he seems very definitively retired. If he's not going to bite on that Pantoja call out and is saying I turned down $1 million or whatever it was, I do feel like he's done.
Can I say one thing about the Hall of Fame? Because I love that. And for my 2026 goal, we've talked about this, but 2026 is 25 years of the WEC. It's the 25th year anniversary since the WEC started. And I would love to see an all WEC class. But I also feel like there's some challenges with what the wings are from pioneer to modern, because in my opinion, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but it feels like some of these guys who bridged kind of the gap between old school and new school, they could be pioneers. Guy like Dominic Cruz, whenever he retires, yes, he could be in the modern wing, but he helped bring bantamweight to the UFC. So I also like the idea of maybe kind of adjusting what it looks like for that pioneer wing as well, because there's specific dates that are included and who can be, you know, they had to have fought within a specific period. But I just think the way the sport is evolving, that could also, I don't know, it could also go a little bit more in one direction or the other, depending on what they actually did and how they pioneered that specific part of the sport.
Yeah, I would like to see that as well. It does get a little blurry right now, and of course, I think there needs to be some way to adapt it where, like, you could include a guy like Fedor Emelianenko or, like, even Mirko Krokop, who I know spent a lot of years in the UFC, but obviously his best work came in Pride. So, like, you know, it's kind of hard to call him a UFC Hall of Famer purely based off his UFC career. But, he should be honored in that group. I think, you know, Wanderlei Silva was kind of the same. So I think there is at least a path for some of that stuff, but it does get blurry. The fight wing one is interesting to me, you know, that we call some of the fighters who have had fights in the fight wing UFC Hall of Famers.
I know.
But I understand.
For the fourth Griffin Award, we refer to them as Hall of Famers as well. And they are. They're doing something that's putting themselves in the Hall of Fame. But there is a bit to distinguish when a casual viewer might hear that or see that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And let's get, while we're on the topic of Hall of Fame, two more. Let's get Frank Shamrock in there. And let's make like a more physical Hall of Fame too, right? I know right now it's more like, it's like the hallway at the PI. But like it's not like fans can go appreciate that. We need like a Cooperstown for MMA.
I love it. I mean, I got the memorabilia. I could probably, I mean, I would loan it. I wouldn't donate it. It could be loaned.
There you go. No, well, that would be very cool, but maybe one day. I think that's, we've talked about his media. Like, could we start an independent Hall of Fame at one point, but it's hard to get things like that off the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Expensive.
Okay. Do you have a next one here?
Okay. This is my final one, right? Yep. This is my fifth one. Okay. This is kind of self-serving, but also not. I think our production team is the best in the business. I think that they work harder than anyone could ever possibly imagine. They're not just doing UFC fights. They're doing contender series and slap and everything else that falls under the umbrella. And I think we're what people look to when they want to be innovative and when they want to see how to do an 8-hour live broadcast better than anyone in the world. So I would love to see UFC production win all the awards, all the Emmys, all the awards that can be given out. They deserve them. Guys like Zach Candido and Michael LaPlante and our director, Anthony Giordano, like people don't understand the effort that goes into it and how you're walking a tightrope for the entirety of that fight broadcast to just get through it and make sure everything fires on all cylinders. To pull off something like the Sphere, I think was otherworldly, honestly. And I don't think anyone else could have done it as well as we did in the timeline that we did it as well. And so my hope is that they're able to start getting the recognition that they deserve, because I get stopped all the time by broadcasters in all other sports asking me, how do we do stuff, or saying, oh my God, I don't really watch, but every time I do, I'm blown away by what you guys do on air. And so I think our fighters are number one. We wouldn't have anything without them. To display their talent in the best way possible is such an honor and gift. And that's the goal of UFC production. But to be able to storytell in such a creative way and deliver fights and information and a groundbreaking way and in a manner that is creative and keeps your attention for all of those hours, I think they deserve the recognition, and hopefully that comes soon.
Definitely agree. How does that recognition come about? Do you know, like, is it just something that comes out of left field? Do you have to submit like nominees?
No, you submit. We just need everyone to be like, oh, you're right. That is amazing.
You just look at this year. I wasn't at the Sphere show, but I thought watching it from home, like, it was amazing. I did on this podcast a few weeks ago with Luke Thomas. We like ranked our top events of the year, and like I ended up putting UFC 300 at one, but I debated putting Sphere at one just because, you know, the card wasn't the great in terms of the fights, but like the entire event as a whole was obviously so unique. I was very close to putting it at one. I'm sure that was that your most memorable event of 24 that you worked?
Absolutely. And 300 and 303, like, they were so fun, and I definitely won't forget those. But I think anxiety that led into Sphere, like, can we do this? And some of the things we didn't rehearse, like, we just had to hope we could pull them off live. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, I think it was before the co-main event, I was doing something where they were like, a drone's going to fly at you, find the drone, talk to the drone, and then we're going to tell you when to turn. So just do it. And then you'll see the camera. Wow. And we tried to rehearse it, but like something happened. So we couldn't rehearse the whole thing. And I remember I started talking and I could not find the drone. And I'm like, oh my God. And finally, and like, I'm like, okay, I got it. And, you know, I don't think anyone at home realized, like, I think we pulled it off seamlessly, but there was just so much. We wanted to do it right. And we had one chance, and the amount of people that were involved and the hours our producers worked and our tech team. And I will never forget it. It's kind of like Fight Island, the first event at Fight Island. Like, you felt really special to be a part of it. And, you know, I say this, you know, with pride, but to be the only woman on those broadcasts, I don't take that lightly. And, you know, to know that I've earned the spot to be there and to be a part of these historic broadcasts is something really meaningful that I'll never forget and I'll never take for granted either.
It's very well deserved. And you've obviously worked your ass off to get to this spot.
Thank you.
I wonder if we'll get another Sphere show. I don't think it'll be in Las Vegas, but they're building this one.
Oh, in Abu Dhabi, right?
Abu Dhabi. So I think that could come into play at some point. I don't know if
I think you're wrong.
Yeah, I know. They want to match that up. They love doing it big over there in Abu Dhabi and Saudi. Okay, my last one, which might ducktail well into another conversation briefly, but I'm going to say, and the wording is chosen very carefully here, I want to see Islam Makhachev compete in 3 UFC title fights in 2025.
I say it that way
because, of course, if he beats Armin Sarukian, who we're giving all respect to, he can very definitely win that rematch coming up on January 18th. But if he gets through that, you wonder what else there is at lightweight. He'd have the title defense record. It would be another rematch maybe with Charles Oliveira or something like that. Does he go up to welterweight? But then you got Bilal there as recently as like over the weekend. Bilal's at the PI training with Islam and Habib and stuff. They're posting photos together. So I don't know what the path would be to welterweight for him, but if he gets that, I feel like, you know, this year, even if he does Charles rematch first and maybe the third fight of the year, that's when he gets a chance at a second belt. But he needs, I think, that chance if he keeps winning here.
And you know what? I almost put on my list Islam versus Ilya in a super fight, even though, obviously Ilya would have to move up because Islam's not going to move down. But I think there's a lot of potential for really fun fights. And watching Islam fight is always so fun, and being able to work with him, like he and Khabib are really funny guys. And so I always enjoy when it's their fight weeks and being able to interview them and just kind of, see how they do things in the lead up to their processes and what it's like for them afterwards. My favorite thing is that I gave Islam his first peanut butter and jelly. And so, it's like, let's have him another fight. But I also love the activity level that you put in that 3 fights in a year. I think the UFC fans would love that. And to be able to see him compete multiple times in a calendar year would be great for us as well.
Yeah. And I think it could be realistic. Of course, he's fighting first pay-per-view of the year.
Yep.
Ramadan is a little earlier than usual. I think it starts like end of February. So maybe that means we could get him back in there in June, July. And then, they'll want him December. In Abu Dhabi in October. So
True.
Seems like there is a path to that. And the big caveat, if he does go 3-0 this year, he's currently on a 14 fight winning streak in the UFC. Anderson Silva's all-time record is 16. So if he went 3-0 this year, it would be 17 straight wins. He'd have the longest winning streak in UFC history, which in my mind has been one of the most unbreakable records. Kamaru Usman was about 2 minutes and a Leon Edwards head kick away from tying it, but that just goes to show, you see the other guys who have lost at 13 or retired. So that would be pretty special if he's able to pull off that type of year.
I totally agree. Spit those facts too, Mike Vaughn. I love it.
And I guess going off that, a selfish wish as we go, I guess, a little into overtime, I would love to go to Dagestan for a couple of days and like work with those guys, see how they train, just experience the environment. I think it'd be really cool. And that would be like a personal goal or wish that I would have for this year. I know it might be hard to pull off, but I think that would be a crazy cool experience.
I am hoping you can do that. I think that would be so unbelievable. And I know the coverage and content that you would provide and the insight would be tremendous. I truly hope that happens because that would be brilliant.
Yeah. I guess since we're on the topic of like Islam UFC 311, this is obviously a huge card coming up, the first one of the year, the first pay-per-view. I'm very excited. I guess your level of anticipation for those 2 title fights, which I think are arguably one of the best title fight doubleheaders UFC has done.
You know what? I don't think that there could have been a better card or combination of fights to start a calendar year off with because, as you know, Mike, we didn't always have this break through the holidays. We used to have a New Year's card. And so there wouldn't really be a lot of time without a fight. There would maybe be 2 weeks. And so I think people are eager to get back to the fights. Of course, there's one at the Apex this weekend, which we'll all be watching. But I think in terms of pay-per-view, you have people that have waited weeks for this to happen. They feel like they're in withdrawal. And then you bring in arguably one of the biggest stars in the UFC in Islam. And then, oh my God, the co-main, I like literally can't wait for the co-main event, but also the lead up to the co-main event. I just don't know what's going to happen, what's going to be said by who, how people are going to take certain comments and stuff. And I think stylistically, they're important for the division. Obviously, they're important, but I genuinely cannot wait for this card, UFC 311. Also, the Intuit Dome, I have heard nothing but tremendous things about what it's like to experience a sporting event there. And so I think that will only elevate what's happening for us. And it's a great way to kick off this year, 2025. And the UFC, we never take a step backwards. So this already is a step forward, moving in a great direction for what the rest of the year and the tempo that might be set.
I'm curious what, I guess, the broadcast looks like for that one, because I heard through the grapevine that that venue is capable of some very unique broadcast elements, and I know the UFC loves to push the envelope on whatever they're kind of given on venues, so curious to see how that all shakes out. But yeah, that that 1-2 punch for title fights is amazing. We need the Khabib cam for that whole night, because it's going to be insane. I mean, having those two fight back to back, can't imagine the emotional anxiety of that locker room and everything. I think we're just going to get some great content throughout that week. It's always great when DC sits down with those guys as well.
It's
fun across the board. And like you said, I agree, Islam is one of the biggest stars in the UFC right now.
No, absolutely. And I'm so looking forward to all of the media that we get to consume in the lead up to that. But at the end of the day, they're great matchups on that card. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's no better way to start off than a strong pay-per-view. And this certainly fits the bill.
No doubt. You said you had a few others on your list. You want to
rattle a few off here? I kind of like said them. Like, I love the WC Hall of Fame.
Yep.
I think the only other one that I didn't really say, hopefully we can just do more storytelling. That for me is like my favorite thing that I get to do, whether it's feature interviews or the walkout hits or getting to do a report where I can provide some additional insight into who a person is. And so I'm pushing for more of that, through the next year, because I think it's important. It gives people a reason to learn a little bit more about their favorite fighters. Or if you're not a passionate fan, if you're a casual and you're like, why should I care? It gives you a reason to care and who these guys and females are as human beings. And that to me is the most important part of my job. And so hopefully we can just do more of that.
Yeah, hear to that. And I guess just on the whole is like media front, let's just maybe focus more on the positive type of stuff and the positive stories like that. And I hate having to spend my time discrediting fake fight reports and things like that. Like, those are not things I enjoy doing. So let's all just try to be accurate and fair. I understand this is the world we live in, but it's not fun when you do this job and you're spending just as many times trying to confirm and break things as you are just discrediting completely made up information.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, and I don't envy you for that.
Yes. Okay, Megan, before I get you out of here, just tell me a little bit how your first quarter is shaking up. Obviously, you'll be in LA. I'll be there as well next week. Beyond that, are you doing Sydney, London? Where is the UFC schedule going to take you so far this coming
year? So I won't be in Sydney. I believe it's John Gooden who's going to that one, I think. I won't be in Sydney, but I'll be at everything else. I mean, to be honest with you, I just get a list of dates, and I don't even know where some of them are. Sometimes I just say, okay. So I know we've got a big Vegas pay-per-view. I don't want to reveal things I'm not supposed to. Yeah, so I don't know what's out and what's not. But
I think the last event of the year that we have announced is like Mexico City on March 29th or something like that. We have nothing beyond March.
Okay. Yeah. So then I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to get in trouble, but you'll see me at a bunch of different places and it'll be great because it'll be great fights.
Yeah. Hopefully Spain is one. That one will catch your eye when that pops up.
Don't we want to go to Spain like in December for like a nice Christmassy time? I feel like yes. Okay.
Okay, Maggie. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed our wishes for the year. I think there was a lot of great ones here. I think there's a chance at least some of these come true. Megan, do you have one that you feel like most confident in?
I think we're going to see a lot of the challengers against the champions that I have hoped for. And I heard there were rumblings of UFC Spain in 2024. So I think there's a good chance.
Oh my God. I hope so. Please. That's going to be a fight across the industry for who gets assigned to those.
Exactly. Exactly. So.
If there's a time to flex your muscle, that would be the one.
Truly.
Okay. Megan, I appreciate you so much for being here. Of course, everyone follow Megan on social media and everything like that at Megan Olivi. I really appreciate your time. Great job with the NFL this season. We'll take a quick break and I will be back to wrap things up. That does it for the first 2025 edition of the Bonfire Podcast. So thankful for Megan joining the show. What did you guys think of our wishes? How many of them are going to come true? How many of them were crazy, absurd, compelling? You let me know in the comments section. Of course, you can reach out to me on any social media platform as well. But we are just getting started here on the show for 2025. As I said off the top, I'll be traveling to Los Angeles next week for UFC 311. But first, we will have one more podcast, and one I have been very much looking forward to since the inauguration of this show. I think it will be a lot of fun. Not going to spill all the beans. You'll have to tune in and keep an eye out for that. But I promise it will be a lot of fun and one of my most anticipated shows of the year, even though it will be just the second podcast of the year. So in the meantime, thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoy UFC Fight Night 249 this weekend. Enjoy the fights, and I will see you right back here next week by the Bonfire.